This is a production of Cornell University.
Nicole Overton?
Here.
Nikki Reddy?
Here.
Kate Santa Cruz? Lucas Smith?
Here.
Michelle Song?
She's also struggling to get into the Zoom.
Claire Templeman?
Here.
Karina Alfacker? Valeria Valencia?
Here.
Henry Wade? Adele Williams?
Here.
Everest Yan?
Here.
Okay. Analia Nunye?
Here.
That's 23 members present, but I think I saw Michelle. Oh, Michelle and Henry just got in here, so that's 25.
Perfect, thank you. I'm gonna write that down on my sticky. Okay, so the time is 4:49. We have 25 members present, and I'm officially gonna call this meeting to order. Everyone, if you join late, if you are a voting member of the SA, please change your name to SA dash your full name. That helps us with vote count, stuff along those lines. I'm gonna begin with the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gaigono Cayuga Nation. The Gaigono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of the Gaigono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gaigono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Okay. Now I will call for any late additions to the agenda. Okay, now I will go into our consent agenda. And I am looking at resolutions 5 to 10, our responses from President Pollack. So resolution number 5, that was amendments to class council's governing documents. It was acknowledged by the president. Resolution number 6, amendments to the convocation committee's appendix B guidelines. That was tabled indefinitely. Resolution number 7, amendments to the interfaith council at Cornell's governing documents. That was acknowledged by the president. Resolution number 8, amendments to Appendix B of the Student Assembly Charter, that was tabled indefinitely. Resolution number 9, amendments to the Cornell Concert Commission's governing documents, that was acknowledged by the president. And resolution number 10, amendments to election rules for fall 2021, was acknowledged by the president. If you'd like to know her specific comments to any of those, you can look at that at assembly.cornell.edu under Student Assembly resolutions. I can also link it in the chat, which we have access to today. Okay, so next I will turn it over to VP Bonta for open microphone.
Hey everyone, open microphone is for non-SA members, since if you have anything to say, please feel free to unmute yourself and say it, or you can raise your hand. Okay, great. I'll take that as like no one has anything to say. I'll pass it back to President Anyonye.
Okay, thank you, Genevieve. So I would actually like to propose an amendment to our agenda to place Gina next on our agenda. Can I have
second?
One motion? Oh, so you need a motion for it, and then someone can second.
I motion to amend the agenda.
I'll second it.
Gina can speak.
Okay, perfect. So next on our agenda will be Gina.
Thank you all very much. I really appreciate your time today. And I just have some things to share a little bit about the history of shared governance at Cornell and the student assembly's context within that history, and then just some procedural things that I thought might be useful, just again, give an overview. So thank you for putting me up on the agenda and for giving me the time today. I'm just sorry we're not in person because there's so many of you I haven't actually met, but next time. So I'm gonna share my screen. There we go. Hopefully you can see the presentation and not all my notes. Thumbs up, yeah, okay, good. So, the assemblies at Cornell, together with the Faculty Senate, are the expression of the university's commitment to shared governance and constituent representation. So the way I've described it is the faculty have a Senate and the staff and students have assemblies, which are elected, representative, constituent bodies with some amount of delegated authority. In 1955, almost 100 years after the founding of the university, the Board of Trustees transferred the responsibility for non-academic policies to the president of the university. Prior to that, the faculty made decisions regarding policies and procedures affecting students and staff. Cornell shared governance bodies are an outgrowth of the unrest on campus in 1969, which culminated in a mass meeting of over 7,000 people camped in Barton Hall for 3 days discussing conditions on campus, with the ultimate recommendation that a self-governance system be established on campus, which was open, representative, and democratic. And it resulted in the establishment of the assemblies, the university ombudsman, the former campus code of conduct, which is now the student code, and the student elected trustees. The assemblies are active and present in recent campus climate issues as well, ongoing, including student mental health, racial justice, police and CUPD disarmament, support for American and Indigenous students, DACA and support for undocumented students, faculty and staff, ethical concerns with international collaborations, community support during the COVID pandemic, divestment from fossil fuels, the campus code of conduct, among many others. Cornell is one of relatively few institutions in the nation allowing the campus community to directly elect constituent members to its highest governing bodies. Current student elected trustees are Salam Waldai and Liz Davis Frost. Each assembly focuses on issues relevant to the constituency it represents, and its memberships are designed to represent the diversity of the Cornell population it represents. Each assembly serves as a bridge between the larger population and the administration. The assemblies, like the Faculty Senate, receive their authorities from the Board of Trustees. The authority includes recommending changes to university policies that affect the constituencies, subject to the approval by the president, who reviews and responds to all the resolutions passed by the assemblies. And then the assemblies and their committees work directly with the administrative units to arrive at ways of improving university policies and life on campus. The governance system enables members of the community to have access to information, involvement in matters of concern to them, and the authority to examine these issues and make recommendations to the appropriate administrative offices and the president. The assemblies are in a position of not only providing a community evaluation of current and proposed administrative actions, but acting as advocates for them as well. The success of the assemblies and Cornell's whole system of shared governance by the community as a viable means of solving problems is dependent on three elements: hardworking, dedicated volunteers who are committed to serving the university, thank you all, and administration, including middle level managers, which supports and works closely with the assemblies throughout the decision-making process, and active communication between the assemblies and the constituents they serve. The SA and the GPSA are funded through their respective student activity fees, which both assemblies have been delegated by the Board of Trustees to determine every 2 years. And as you know, later in the agenda, Morgan will be giving byline reports related to the upcoming byline cycle. The Employee Assembly and the UA are funded through budget lines in my office. Our office is in 109 Day Hall, and we welcome visitors and always happy for you to drop by. Like I see Duncan now from right next door, And we have a little office swing space that you're very welcome to swing by and use if you need a little space doing assembly work. We're a staff of six. Wendy Treat, whom you know, give a shout out to Wendy, brings over 30 years of experience working at Cornell with almost two here in the Office of the Assemblies. We have four student clerks and Kara Shanahan supports the SA. Where's Kara? Thanks for all the work you do. I'm coming up on 15 years at Cornell with seven in the Office of the Assemblies. And together we organize, attend, record, report, and support all of the assemblies and the committees. We also host a monthly leadership breakfast, which is hosted by Vice President for University Relations, Joel Molina. Guests are usually determined by campus climate needs at the time or other strategic and timely need to share information with the assembly's leadership group, because those assembled represent the entire campus community, students, faculty, and staff. And now a few slides on the procedures and processes of the assemblies as they relate to parliamentary procedure and Robert's Rules of Order. Robert's Rules of Order is a set of rules for conduct at meetings that allows everyone to be heard and allows the assembly to make decisions without confusion. With sensitivities to those members less comfortable with speaking up, and in an effort to engage those to whom elected roles may be new, the use of Robert's Rules of Order ensures there's a space at the table for all voices, the loud and the quiet. The role of the president is to moderate the debate, unless they are engaged in the issue of resolution, in which case the role of moderator and authority of chair moves to the executive vice president until the matter is settled and the vote is taken. All assemblies are ruled by their governing documents. Some may be changed internally, some require the approval of the president, but these are your documents, and there are processes to change, amend, and table them at any time. A charter is the basic rules of the assembly. They have stringent amendment requirements and must be approved by the president of the university. The bylaws are detailed procedures and rules for the assembly and the committee operations and can usually be amended by simple majority. Standing rules are approved by the assembly and must be renewed each year by the incoming assembly. A few of the basic principles include courtesy and justice for all, consideration of only one subject at a time, rights of absent members must be protected, the minority must be heard, and the will of the majority must prevail. Quorum is the minimum number of voting members required to do business, which is half plus one. A motion is an action considered by the assembly. Something on the floor is the state of being actively considered by the assembly. Having the floor means the person has the exclusive right to address the assembly regarding a motion. An executive session is a portion of a meeting open only to members of the assembly, voting and non-voting. A motion is a proposal that the assembly take certain action or that it express itself as holding certain views. So you'd ask to be recognized by the chair, raise your hand or placard, or be placed on a speaker's list. A voting member then makes a motion. Another voting member seconds the motion. There's a great cheat sheet for the processes available on our website. Let me see if I can do this. Well, I can't post it in chat, but I'll send it around afterwards. Oops. No, I can't. Uh-oh. There we go. So when debating your motions, it's very important to listen to the other side, to focus on issues and not personalities, to avoid questioning motives, and always be polite. The legislative actions of the assemblies are most typically drafted as resolutions. The process for developing a resolution has several steps, allowing for engaging key stakeholders and soliciting community input, and should take some time prior to coming to the assembly for a vote. A quick checklist involves checking for legislative history, polling your constituents, presenting to all relevant committees, soliciting feedback from relevant university offices, having support from as many members as possible, and making sure the issue is still unresolved. We always like to say the rule of thumb is you should have a pretty good idea of how of the outcome of a vote before you even get to the floor of the assembly. That's all I have. Thank you again. I'm happy to take any questions or feel free to stop by the office or send an email either to me at ggc9@cornell.edu or both Wendy and I are happy to receive emails at assembly@cornell.edu.
Thanks, Sheena.
You're very welcome.
Okay, so if anyone has any questions or comments for Gina, can you just raise your hand? Representative Jiang.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Right. First of all, thank you very much for coming and explaining this to us. So I realized in the previous slide, I saw that regarding of the governing hierarchy, where the board of trustees at the top, like the president, and the president oversaw all the assemblies. So I wonder, does the president has the right or power to overrule or veto all the any decisions that pass by any assemblies?
So it's a good question. The authority of the assemblies is to make recommendations. So it wouldn't necessarily be a veto. The president will always respond to the resolutions, either accepting them, acknowledging them, rejecting them. But that absolutely is the president's purview.
Okay. Oh, thank you. I just maybe one small follow-up question, if I was fine with that. So essentially, the assemblies will act like the sort of the cabinet that advising, recommending the president. So I wonder, regarding the policies in university in general, is there a group of people who decide, or the president will decide alone by herself?
That's a very good question too. So in that tree that I had, that you were referencing, where the board of trustees and the president, and then she has a cabinet, mostly of vice presidents, vice provosts, and other senior administrators that serve as her advisory group. And in fact, I highlighted in blue the vice provost or vice president Lombardi and Dean of Students Love, who really are the points of contact for the student assembly. So that if you have an issue that or a policy that you would like to see changed, those would be the points of contact to work through. As I said, you know, if there's engaging the stakeholders before you put a resolution to the floor, to really get a sense of how they can help move the issue along through to the president.
Okay, so instead of the vice president and the president together have a committee that like the central political bureau that have a voting, the president decided essentially one person decided based on everybody's recommendation. Is that?
I don't sit at that table. I would think that the president has a great deal of respect for the folks that advise her, because she is not at a lot of the issue tables. These are issues that are brought to her. She is the decision maker for the university. But I don't sit at those tables. I don't know what the actual structure of how decisions are made. But I do know that the assemblies, shared governance, have changed policy. Most recently, the Board of Trustees changed its policies on how issues could be brought forth to the Board of Trustees, whereas before, as I mentioned, it's mostly making recommendations. But the policy on fossil fuel divestment created an opportunity for all of the shared governance bodies to come together in support of that, which ultimately the Board of Trustees took into consideration and made some changes to its policy and also the process by which it will receive recommendations. So there are a lot of different ways, but the role of the assemblies, different from the Faculty Senate, which actually has purview over academic policy. So it can change academic policy, but the assemblies make recommendations.
All right, so the only person who essentially can veto any, sorry, if that's...
No, sorry. Yeah, I was just gonna like open it in case anyone else had questions. Sure. Okay, Representative Jang, if you want to answer. I mean, if you want to ask.
Just one last very quick question. First of all, thank you very much for explaining this much. So my very last question is, so the only person who, I'm not saying we are uncertified of any top decision or anything. It's just like in a hypothetical situation, let's say the only people who can veto the decision in the presidential level is the Board of Trustees. Am I correct?
The president reports up to the Board of Trustees.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yep. Good questions. Thank you.
Okay, are there any other questions or comments? Perfect, thank you so much, Gina, and thank you for your wonderful presentation.
Thank you very much. Thanks again for the time and for all you're doing. Hope everybody had a good fall break.
Yeah. Okay, so next we can move into announcements and reports. The first thing we have on our agenda is a byline announcement from Representative Baker.
Hello. So the charter requires that I tell you this information. So on Monday, the Appropriations Committee will be meeting with ISU, Interfaith Council, and SAFC. That'll be from 5:15 to 8:30 p.m. in 145 McGraw Hall. Okay, now open up your box, your Cornell box for the 10-14-2021 essay meeting. We're gonna vote on slope day and CRP allotments today. And then next week we'll vote on EARS and MGFC, but I'll present EARS and MGFC today. So we're gonna start with slope day. So yes, just go ahead and open that up so you can follow along. So slope day, I presented this last week, but basically the committee felt that Slope Day Programming Board should be allotted the $21 that they requested despite their large $200,000 rollover, because they wanna come back bigger and better with a great Slope Day and allocating more money to the talent fee. And so the committee feels that Slope Day, as the largest annual outdoor student gathering, should receive that $21 that they requested. And yes, the whole rationale is here for you to read. And I'll open it up to discussion now. I would look favorably upon a motion to vote.
I motion to vote on this recommendation.
Okay. Perfect. We are now voting. So as a reminder, this is only for voting members of the Student Assembly. If you are voting in favor, please raise your hand. Okay, I have a vote. Okay, sorry. Now lower your hands. If you are voting against, please raise your hand.
I can't figure out how to raise my hand, so I did it in real life. I voted for it.
Okay. Perfect. And then if you are abstaining, please raise your hand. Okay, perfect. So in a vote of 23-1-1, that passes. Congratulations, Representative Baker.
Thank you. So now we'll do CRP. So just go ahead and open that up. Same as last week, I can't present this because of the conflict of interest, but Annie, go ahead.
Yeah, the committee recommended funding CRP at the requested amount in order to cover kind of the non-negotiable cost of both the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal.
I'd like to motion Move into voting.
Second.
Okay, we are now in voting. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Oh, and actually just a correction, there was a miscount on the tally, so it was 24-0-1 for the last one. Everyone, please raise your hand if you're in favor. Okay, please lower your hands. All those abstaining, please raise your hands. And I'll give it a second for it to clear out. And all those opposed, please raise your hands. Okay, and a vote of 24-0-1, that passes as well. Congratulations, Representative Baker.
Great, so now we'll move on to MGFC. So this is the Multicultural Greek and Fraternity Council. Remember, we're not voting on MGFC or EARS today, I'm just presenting them, and then we can discuss. So MGFC, 2020 to 2022, they were allocated $1. For this filing cycle, they've requested a 7-cent increase. The committee decided to allocate $1 for the following reasons. So first of all, MGFC reports having a rollover of somewhere around $10,000. So mind you, with the $1 allocation, that means MGFC gets about $15,000. Reason why they want the 7-cent increase, which is about $1,000, and then that's for 2 years, so that's $2,000 overall. Reason why they want that is because they're adding 4 new sub-organizations, and so they allocate all their money evenly across all their sub-organizations. So there's 12, but they count themselves as the 13th. So there's 13 of them in total. And so if you're adding 4 of them, then that means each one gets a little less. So they wanted the 7-cent increase in order to keep it around like the same after evenly dividing all the allocation. So the committee decided that with the 10,000 roller allocation, that's more than sufficient to cover that. So then that would mean with the 2,000, they would be left with an 8,000 rollover. And then the committee also wants for them to spend down that rollover to an amount near zero by the conclusion of fiscal year 2024. MGFC didn't really have a plan for spending it down. So they didn't take into account the rollover in their proposed projected budgets for 2022 to 2024. So our hope is that they will use that extra $8,000 and divide that also evenly amongst all the work. So then they all get a little more than they usually get. So underlying issue. So the sub-organizations of MGFC haven't historically really been aware 100% that they have this money at their disposal. So they haven't really been spending a lot of it. So MGFC is committing to having a outreach campaign in order to tell all the sub-organizations that this money is here for them to use, so that hopefully they'll get more requests from their sub-organizations so that all the money can be used up and we won't have any rollovers in the future. So the committee welcomes and encourages any future increases during the next filing cycle and filing cycles after that. But we want to see first that MGFC's outreach campaign goes into effect, that it works, that there is a heightened demand by the sub-organizations for more funding so that they can have those more events. And that's the rationale. I'll open it up to discussion now. Just a note. So yes, before each meeting, I have to send the reports to all the works and ask them if they want to appeal. MGFC is not appealing, so they accepted it. So that's Duncan. Yes.
Okay.
You can go first, Emily.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Morgan, I was just wondering if you can clarify a little bit more about the outreach program, any other information they gave you, or like what the process is with like monitoring that, if there is any.
Yes. So they said that, well, MGFC is familiar with all the leaders of their sub-organizations. So they just said that they're going to make sure and contact them and tell them and do that in the future too. Like at the beginning of each academic year, the committee requested that they have like some sort of funding session like SAFC has with their sub-organizations and tells them like, this is the process for doing it. And like, this is how much money there is at your disposal. So basically they just committed to better communication across the leaders of their suborg.
So I have a question. I'm wondering how MGFC's basically their rollover compares to like other organizations' rollovers, because I know that like last week we talked about Slope Day and they had a pretty significant, much higher rollover. So I was wondering how the rationale of the committee like factored that in.
Yes. So for Slope Day, we didn't decide to take into account their rollover because they told us that they'll be using and spending that down. Like they'll be putting more money towards fixing up facility type things. And then also like most of it going towards talent. So like and then also since it's like such a big event, like it makes sense. And it's just like one big event, makes sense for them to have like an extra couple thousand after they spend that rollover down, because like with a big event, like there is more uncertainty with that. And then MGFC is different on the other hand, because it's just sub organizations having a bunch of little events. So like it makes sense for an organization like this to not have that rollover. And they didn't really have it before COVID. So it's just like just a COVID thing. Slope Day usually had a rollover before COVID of a couple tens of thousands, but like it's because of the uncertainty with the big event. Like if a talent is like 100,000 one year, and then the next year it's like 140,000, like you can't really predict that based on what the students want to hear for their talent. So that's the difference. If there's,
Lucas.
Yeah,
I was just going to make a motion to approve, prefacing, if that's okay, prefacing that we don't have to actually table these. We only have to table the final dollar value recommendation. So hopefully we start doing this, we won't have like six reports every meeting. So yeah, we don't actually have to table these individual ones if we look back at the precedent from the last byline cycle.
Wait, you're saying last cycle they presented and voted on each individual one the same day?
Correct. You only have to table the final recommendation, the final number. So the big number at the end of the whole process, that can't be approved when you say the fee is going to be 300, but these individual ones we can do at each meeting, we can approve based on the precedent from the last cycle.
I don't think that the language says that though, like in our constitution.
It says the recommendation, which is the recommendation, like the, when it refers to recommendation, it refers to the fee. Because it was just making me think, because this is kind of slow to do this, three or six organizations, and you know, it's weird to reopen a discussion, I guess, right? If the organization has to appeal before we first discuss it. So,
okay,
yeah, I'm going to stick by motion to approve, but yeah.
I mean, if you all think it's annoying, like we can change it, but... I thought it made sense to have it just because I wanted it to sit with people for a week to think about it. But yeah, I guess, do you guys think it's annoying? Do you want to vote on
this? I'd just like to second Representative Baker. I think it's like important that everyone has, because a lot of times we don't have any of this information until the meeting of, so that people can read like the full reports and everything along those lines. Because it doesn't go out in our agenda. But there's also a motion on the floor, so do we have a second?
I want a second, but I also just want to add that this week was weird because usually meetings are on Monday, but because this week was on Wednesday, these reports like were like that. That's just something that happened with this week because of fall break. But yeah, I will second it to vote on it.
I have a point of personal preference. Is this motion to table or to vote? The current one that's just been seconded.
My motion is to approve.
This is a motion to approve.
I don't think you can motion to approve without changing.
Yeah, I think that's in Morgan's hands. Like, I think I'm gonna leave it to Representative Baker.
I mean, can we like table it and then I can have a second to read the charter?
Okay. I'm gonna withdraw my motion. Actually, I think we should table it this week, do it like we usually do, and then revisit next week.
Cool. Okay.
So we're withdrawing that motion. We're going to go back to Robert Jules. Does anyone else have any questions or comments?
Motion to table.
Motion to table.
I don't actually think we need to motion to table this. It's not a resolution. We just kind of move on to the next thing.
Motion to end debate.
We're not debating. Okay, so I think what I'm going to leave this at is I'm going to take a motion to table, and then I'm going to take a second to table.
Motion to table.
Okay, second, do I have a second?
Oh, perfect. Second to table.
Okay. Representative Baker, you can present the next one.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think previous weeks we've tabled them, so I think we should just keep doing that. So now open up the EARS one. EARS also didn't say they wanted to appeal. So 2020-2022, they were allocated 150. They've requested a 10-cent increase. The committee believes that they should be allocated 130. So here are the reasons. So, okay, looking at all of the peer mentoring materials, there's just a lot of potential there to save, like, honestly, a few thousands based on just buying things in bulk and not just like one by one, because there's like really high costs for how that they're doing it. So the committee recommends that they start buying things in bulk. Also, if you read it, like there's, it's kind of strange. So they have 3 meeting places a week, but we didn't really get any attendance numbers, but we know that, like, if you look at $3,000 on 100 boxes of snacks, it's actually, each box has like 50 snacks, so it's like 500. It's like they don't use all 500 snacks, so it's like buying less of them. Same with the hand sanitizers. And then also, like, just a more of a bigger point was that almost 40% of the budget goes towards promotional materials. And the issue with that is that they're already having too many people like sign up to be like staff members or trainees. So they're having to put like around 30 people on a wait list. And then the other issue with that is that if you read a little further down, their services are open to the greater Cornell community. So what that means is like literally anyone with Cornell ties can be staff member or a trainee. And so that opens the door to like grad students taking a spot because it's first come, first serve. And then undergraduate students, the ones who are actually paying for your services to be on campus, like aren't, because now they're on the wait list because they signed up a week after, like a grad student or even a staff member or a faculty member or a spouse. So we thought that was an area of concern. Also just the fact that like 40% is going towards promotion. The committee hopes that in the future, a larger proportion will go toward the actual peer mentoring and training costs. And then another big line item of concern was the $4,200 on shirts. So these are for the staff and trainees. But the committee believes that they're buying too many shirts because in 1 year, you're not gonna have more than 200 trainees and staff members based on the numbers that they reported. So lots of extra shirts there. So like based on their submission for the hypothetical cut section, like the committee believed, like these are all areas that could like greatly reduce. But again, like we want yours to like have support and continue to provide their great services to students. So just the 20-cent decrease there, which accounts to 3,000, which we believe if you take into account like the buying things in bulk, buying fewer and cheaper t-shirts, because you can also buy those in bulk. And then also like spending less on promotional things. Like we asked them what their most useful form of promotion was, and they said social media, but then they're also doing a lot of things that like aren't like free social media type things. So we feel like they should capitalize more on that. Yeah, I take all that count. That's actually way more than 3,000, but we just decided 3,000. And so yeah, we want a future increase for EARS in the next byline cycle. But we want to see first that EARS reduces those costs that can be reduced. And then reduces their promotional materials costs, shifts some of that to their actual peer mentoring and training expenditures. And then also an area of concern was the staff retreat at the end of the year, which is like pretty expensive. They said the purpose was to serve as like benefits to the staff members, but we didn't really understand their reasoning for that because it's at the end of the year when their work's already done. So at the beginning of the year, sure, we get it, but it's at the end of the year. So, yeah, reduction or complete elimination of those costs. And accepting all interested undergraduate students before considering others, because like I said, again, undergraduate students are the one funding this, so they should be able to access the programming like before staff members, faculty members, and graduate students. So that, I'll open it up now. Yes.
Representative Katie.
Oh. I love being called on twice, appreciate it. I have a couple questions. I think I will just kind of jump into it. And then if the conversation leads in one of these directions, we can let it go there. And then I'll get to the other stuff later. First, once again, as always, appreciate all the work of the Appropriations Committee. Really great work. Love seeing it. I have a couple questions. So I guess kind of like breaking down this funding, specifically, how much are we not allocating to them? Because you listed a bunch of areas where we're like, maybe they could spend less. Totally understand that. I'm wondering if there's like a rough estimate of how much we've said, like, okay, this is areas they can cut down, and how much we're not actually allocating to what they ask for. Is there a discrepancy in that, or are they basically the same amount?
Sorry, could you repeat like the last 20 words you said?
Yeah, sorry, it's a little confusing. So you listed things like shirts, the staff retreat, an issue with letting community members join before students, promotional changes. I'm wondering if like in that area of things that we'd suggest they fund less, roughly how much that is compared to how much we're not allocating them in what they initially asked.
Oh yeah. So one of the members had an analysis that brought it down to $1.16, which was cutting out the big line items of concern. But you know, like that's a really big cut. So if you look down at the voting totals, like we start off with what they asked for, and then we just vote on like the next proposed number. So it was 130 was approved before going down to like 116. But yeah, they can still fund like a lot of the stuff we had concerns with. It's just that was the number that got the votes.
Totally understand that. Because I have some points of concern. So take shirts, for example, right? I think that's a reasonable area we as the student assembly can say, maybe we shouldn't fund, you know, however much it costs to get however many shirts they said. I think you said like it was way more than they needed, which, you know, just objectively, personally, I understand that. I'm wondering what is the consideration for promotional changes? What are the considerations for if you could ask for a little bit more clarity, I guess, with the student aspect of it? Because there you seem to echo a concern that other community members are involved before students. I want to hear a little bit more about that, and then a little bit more about the promotional changes we're requesting, if possible.
Yes. Okay. So for the first one, so they said they usually take about 100-ish trainees, maybe a little more. And then they said that there's usually about like 30 people on the wait list, and it's on a first come, first serve basis. So like if you have like a couple grad students, you have some staff members who are trying to be involved, and then they reach their cap of 100 or so trainees. And then afterwards, like some undergraduate students want to be involved, they can't because they can't take that many people. So that's the concern there. That's why we wanted like undergraduate students who are interested to like be accepted first, because they are funding this. Sorry, what was your second question?
I'll get this. I can get to the second one in a second. I just had kind of a fault to that. What is more of asking?
I'm going to go to Representative Williams, and then we can.
All right, I'll go back to that later. Thank you.
List. Representative Williams.
Hi. So I know that with EARS in the past year, they were having difficulty being allowed to train students because some of the guidelines there were changing. And I personally feel like getting staff members involved might be important in order for this to actually reflect community needs, as this is one of the only campus mental health services that students are able to get involved with, as well as other staff and community members. Is there any reason why we made it such a significant cut? I understand needing recommendations about trying to assist them in managing their funds better and doing these differently, but with, you know, it's really important to have that money for promotional costs so that students know that this mental health resource is available to them, as well as promoting enough so students can sign up then before the staff and everything. So is there any way that you would be able to give us a more specific cost breakdown just so we know why this number was chosen? Sorry if that was a little all over the place.
Okay, let me try to remember. Okay, yeah, last year, so they couldn't do peer counseling, but they've replaced that completely with peer mentoring. So it's just pretty much the same thing. Second thing you said, so I can't show you their actual budget because that's like, I can't do that. But wait, sorry, what cost did you want to better understand?
Just kind of how the idea of their promotional costs was factoring into this cut, because you said they were doing 40% for promotional costs. Like, why was the 30%, the 3 cents chosen to be?
Right, okay. Like I said, 130 was just the number, like that wasn't, like from the analysis in this rationale, this is just like everything people brought up. But the 130, like if you take into account all of the concerns, their allocation would be like way lower. It's just the 130 passed the committee. But yeah, like this, so the 20%, I mean the 20 cent cut from their original 150 to 130. So that's, you multiply that by 15,000 students, that's like $3,000. So like spending 9,000 on promotion this year, well, first of all, they're spending like $4,200 on shirts. So, I mean, if you're just trying to find ways like to understand what they might do with that, with less, with $3,000 less, it's like, well, they could take it all from their shirts and then only have $1,200, or they might take it all from their retreat and then not have a retreat. So I mean, I don't know exactly what they're gonna do with less than $3,000. All we have is their hypothetical cut submission. So like when we ask them a 10% hypothetical cut, they cut some from the shirts, they cut some from Instagram and Daily Sun ads, they cut some from the retreat, and then they cut some from I believe hand sanitizer. So like purpose of hypothetical cuts is just to see like the things that they think are like less important to fulfilling their mission. So then we can kind of see like, oh, good, they're not touching any of their peer mentoring or training material costs, so that's good. And then we look at like the 25% cut, and then they like cut more from the shirts, and then they cut like more from the retreat, and then it's just that like that's what we expect that they'll take from. So like that's what the big middle paragraph talks about mostly. So I mean, it's not like we're not going to see them out on the streets passing out stickers or quarter cards anymore. It's just like maybe they won't buy 2 Daily Sun ads, maybe they'll only buy 1, or maybe they won't buy 350 shirts, maybe they'll only buy 200. So.
Okay, so I see that we have a lot of hands raised. What I think I'm gonna do, is Carson on this call?
Yes.
Carson is on this call. Thank you, Carson. Can we do 30-second questions, and then I will give Morgan 45 seconds to respond. Carson, is there a way that you could keep time right now? I know it's like kind of awkward because we're virtual. I can also.
One thing I could do if this works is I could screen share a timer, and then you would all be able to see it. If that
would actually be amazing.
All right.
I'm gonna give Carson like a second to do that, and then we will go to our next. Our next person will be Representative Mullen.
All right. Can you all see that?
Yep, we can. Thank you so much. Okay, so we are going to do 30-second questions, and then we'll do a minute. Is a minute, like, good, Morgan?
Yes.
Good. Okay, so then we will do a minute responses from Representative Baker. Okay, so first question is Representative Mullen.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just a little confused. It seems a bit counterintuitive to lower their allocation when promotion is like one of the most critical parts of the existence of ears, to like promote to members of the community. They do need those ads, like two, you know, does make a difference. So it seems a little bit counterintuitive to me. This massive, it is a substantial decrease. So I'm just a little, you know, concerned about that.
Yeah, I mean, I was just throwing out random numbers. Like, I don't know if that's what they'll do, but I'll try to give more information without oversharing. So, I mean, so first thing that they would cut are t-shirts, then some Instagram ads, and then some like stuffed animals, soft blankets, stuff like that. And then if you, okay, just talk over me when I reach 1 minute because I'm not looking at the timer. And then they would move on to cut like social retreat, I mean the retreat for the staff. And then some of the 500 things of food. So, and then if you go like even more, I mean that we're not even cutting them that much. So that other stuff won't be touched. But and if you go even more, which also we're not even cutting them this much, but that includes like some quarter cards, some like, yeah, we're not doing it that much at all.
Perfect. Representative Katie.
Carson gets set first, but I guess I can just start going. Morgan, I would just ask this, preface again, thank you for this committee, because I realize this is not always easy work and it's very easy to be critical of this. I'm wondering if we could just appropriate or allocate what was appropriated in 2020, 2021, going to 150 instead of 130, because I'm sensing there's a lot of concern by other members. And I think if we really have issues with something like the shirts, for example, that would basically say, instead of giving you more money, we're expecting you to be more frugal with it. Kind of send a different message instead of lowering it, just meeting their funding.
Yeah. The process for overturning the Appropriations Committee decision, that's a 2/3 vote by the student assembly. So that's all I have to say. So like, you feel free to vote on it.
Thank you, Representative Smith.
So I agree. I think that the Appropriations Committee did a really good job of being critical, but I think they're a little bit underfunded with that estimate. But I wonder, do we know how many graduate students compose the organization? So are they eligible for funding through GPSA, SAFC? Because that would alleviate some of the stress if we're able to push them that direction.
They don't currently get funding from the GPSA and the SAFC.
Thank you. Representative Banta, or VP Banta, sorry.
You're good. Hi, thanks, Morgan. So I'm wondering why we sort of like keep decreasing student budgets when instead we sort of like should be providing them with the resources they need to succeed as an org. I mean, like, if we're not like broke as an SA and we're not like struggling financially, like, I don't know why we keep cutting these students' budgets. And so there's a reason, like, I'd love to hear it, but if not, I sort of like agree with what Duncan said too. But again, I'd love to understand why we keep decreasing the budget.
Yeah, just reiterating, like we started with the 160 that got zero yes votes. Then the next highest number that was proposed by a committee member was 130, and that's what passed. So, I mean, it's not me like unilaterally saying like 130. So yeah, that's all I have.
Thank you, Representative Overton.
All right, hi, thank you. I was gonna say, Morgan, like, I'm definitely not blaming you. You are not, like, responsible, like, solely for all this, but I will say, I wanna echo kind of the same sentiments that Representative Katie said earlier. I really just don't understand why the funding is so low, especially because I believe that a lot of these services could be used to promote EARS message, especially with the advertising. How are they supposed to be able to, like, reach people as effectively? And I'm also wondering why, like, a number like 150 or 140 or 145, like, wasn't proposed instead of the one, just the 130.
I don't really have a response. I don't propose numbers. I let the committee members do it. I just chair.
Representative Gleiberman.
I would like to voice my support for the Appropriations Committee recommendation. I think we can all agree that EARS is an amazing service. Their primary role is to deliver peer mentoring services to students. It's not to be an advertising agency. I know initially they were having trouble getting their name out, but now a lot more people know about EARS than anything else. And it's not like, I just want to reiterate, like, the money, most of the money is not going to, like, their peer mentoring service. It's not like we're going to cut that in any way. So yeah, Morgan, you don't have to respond to that.
Oh, I'm not going
to
respond.
Would you like to respond? Okay. Representative, oh, that would make a second speaker's list. Okay, I will go to Representative Valencia.
Yeah, so I just kind of had the question about, like, the process you mentioned earlier about, like, overturning, like, the ABSCOM decision. Like, what does that process look like? Like, would we, like, in this meeting, like, throw a number out and vote on it? Or, like, just kind of, like, wondering, like, how that process works.
Yeah, so someone would just say, like, I motion to overturn the Appropriations Committee recommendation and make it, and then fill in the number. And then it needs 2/3. That's the process.
Okay, Representative Williams. And then I have a comment after Representative Williams.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to take a second to kind of voice my concern. You know, now that I'm understanding kind of how the Appropriations Committee acts with voting on these numbers, I'm a little bit disappointed that you didn't even consider giving them the same allotment with strong suggestions to fix their budgeting. I think that I know plenty of people who I had to tell about EARS. I think that advertising is really important, and I'm just disappointed you didn't consider 150. Thank you.
I mean, I don't really have a response. Like, I don't recommend numbers to vote on. That's what the committee members do.
So I have a question, and honestly, this might just come from ignorance. I'm actually, like, curious. So since I've, like, basically seen, like, for example, with, like, EARS right now, we're giving them below basically what they had last time. In a byline cycle, what happens if we have, like, a surplus at the end of the semester?
Wait, what do you mean? What do you mean? Who?
Yeah, so I'm just, like, wondering, like, what happens at the end of the semester if, for example, we're, like, under what we had given to other organizations in the past?
Oh, I mean, so how it works is, like, we decide all the individual allotments, we add that up, that's a number. And then in January, everyone who does financial aid, they take that number. So, like, right now it's 309. And they charge each student $309 when they pay to attend Cornell. And so then they collect that, like, for the following 2 years. So, like, the money that all of these orgs are operating on right now was allocated already. Like, that was decided fall 2019. So now we're deciding the money that'll be allocated for the following 2 years. So whatever we decide is not gonna affect this academic year. So, like, there's no surplus. It's like they only collect after all the numbers are decided.
Perfect, thank you. Representative Eisman.
I just wanted to echo Representative Gleiberman's sentiments show my support for this allocation fee. I want to be careful with my wording because I'm still unclear about NDA stuff. But and Morgan mentioned a lot of the things that were taken into consideration. And even though those were categorized as promotional, they're largely internal and do not primarily serve the students in general. So to clarify.
Representative Wan. Oh, sorry, Morgan, would you like to respond?
Oh, no.
Okay, Representative Wan.
All right, so yeah, making an additional comment too, one thing to note is that I think, like as Morgan explained, as far as I know, this contributes to, you know, what our final student activity fee is. And, you know, just to put in context, 2 years ago when it was raised, it went up 32%, which was probably one of the highest changes that it's gone up in the history of the student activities fee. And I'd prefer for that to not go up even higher, or even possibly it could go down this year, which would benefit students greatly.
Okay. Representative Baker.
No, I'm good.
Okay. Representative Grohmeyer.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of, I guess, question and comment here. From what I understand, I believe that they have not appealed this decision by the APSCOM, and I think that, you know, secondly, like we chose our APSCOM people to put out good numbers, and you know, I think we should trust the process. And you know, that was a decision they made, and they had backup for it. So, assuming that yours didn't appeal this decision at all, I think it should stay the way it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, usually, so the appropriations committee comes up with a number. They send the complete rationale to the organization. Then the organization can either A, like send a representative an appeal and be present to answer questions and say like, oh, we would like this number, please reconsider. EARS did not ask to appeal, so just context.
Representative Leon.
Yeah, I think I'll keep it short, but I just wanted to reemphasize some of the concerns that people have been bringing up. It's kind of beyond me how 150 wasn't suggested as a possible allocation, and like why we couldn't just give them the same with, again, like some more guidance on how to spend their money. And yeah, I don't know, a 20 cent decrease when they asked for a 10 cent increase just like does not sit right.
Representative Baker.
I don't have anything.
Representative Katie.
I have a lot to say, but I'm just going to keep it really short and say that I think the appropriate thing to do right now would be to table this and have a larger conversation next week. In that time, I hope to propose a change, and I'd love to talk to more members about that. I personally am of the belief that we should meet the 150 allocation, but again, I think we should table this for now. So I'm going to motion to table. I believe that's the procedure. So.
I broke the speakers list. I didn't realize Representative Song had her hand up. So I would just ask that if you're going to motion to table, can we let her speak and then—
Totally fine, totally fine. I retract that.
Representative Song.
Yes, thank you for the consideration. And I really do appreciate the work that the Appropriations Committee does. I initially ran for student assembly because I promised my constituents to create an equitable learning environment at Cornell. And anything that would impede their ability to do so was a vast disservice to our community. And while this does include overall lowering the student activities fee, this does not mean defunding EARS, which is an absolutely essential service. It also does not sit right with me that they asked for 10 cents more and you cut 20 cents out.
Thank you. So now I will entertain Representative Katie. I know you had a motion.
Yeah, I'd like to just reinstate that motion to table until next week.
Second.
With the intention to further discuss possible changes that I think a lot of members have echoed.
Second.
Perfect. So that resolution, it's not a resolution, that is tabled. Did someone say something?
Yes, I don't think Representative Baker got a chance to respond to the last one before the table motion.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Representative Baker, would you like to speak?
Oh, I'm good. We can table.
Okay, perfect. Then we will table. Okay, was that, I believe that was the last one. Okay, so now we are, let me get the agenda back up. I'm so sorry, I lost the agenda. Okay, now we are in initiatives. Okay, we did presentations and forums early. Any business of the day? Representative Song, is your hand just still up? Okay, that's sorry. What I figured. No worries. Okay, and then now we will move into new business. We're gonna work on staffing committees with the intention to fill all our committees today. So I know that all of you have access to that document. I will also put it in the chat right now. So we can go through everything. Representative Smith.
We're changing our procedure. I know we started this process in executive session. Are we now going to do that on the record?
There was no motion for executive session. Would you like to motion?
I would make the motion that we move into executive session to discuss appointments of for committees.
Second.
Okay, do we have any dissent to that? Okay, then we can take a vote. All those in favor, please raise your placards, or sorry, not raise your placards, raise your hands. Okay, everyone lower your hands. And then all those opposed, please raise your placards or raise your hand, sorry. I'm gonna give it 2 seconds. Okay, are the three we have up opposed? Okay. All those abstaining, please raise your placards. Okay, I am missing 2 votes. So a few people didn't vote on that.
Which I think Genevieve's laptop died. She's trying to get back on her phone, but she wasn't here to hear the discussion.
Okay, awesome. I'm gonna count those as abstains. So in a vote of 22-0-3, that passes. So we are now in executive session.
I just want to let you know how this is going to work. So
I'd highly smile upon a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Perfect. Second. By unanimous consent.
Second. Let's roll it
back. Perfect. Do we have a second to that?
Second.
Second.
Okay. This meeting is adjourned at 5:58.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.